Welcome to the Role Player Podcast on wolfamongwolves.com, also known as the Wolf Among Wolves Network, featuring a ton of great writers, ton of great podcasts. Go check all of them out at the website. Our particular podcast is brought to you by Blake Seed Based, which is a Chicago-based company making seed and fruit snack bars. They've already been featured in CNN, Forbes, Vogue, and Real Simple, and have been voted in Real Simple as the best fruit and snack bar. Super fire. It's a Chicago-based company founded by a Minnesotan, Blake Sorensen, who had a deathly nut allergy and was just looking for a way to create snacks that everyone can enjoy. The snacks use pumpkin, sunflower, and flax seeds, real fruit, and chocolate, and are crazy delicious. You can eat them if you're barefoot water skiing, saunas and cold tubs, couch surfing, breakdance battles, sitting at your desk, or anything in between. They got crazy good flavors. My personal favorite is the blueberry lemon, but they also got the pineapple, the s'mores, and the raspberry. So you got to go check out the variety pack if you want, or you can buy them individually. Whatever you want to do, I promise you'll thank me later. All you got to do is go to blakecbase.com and check out everything they have to offer. And if you're listening to our podcast, go use our promo code ROLE, R-O-L-E, to get 20% off. That's BlakeSeedBase.com, BlakeSeedBase.com, for those of y'all that can't spell, and go seed your passion with Blake Seed Base.
Goes to the rim, throws up a touch shot, got it, count it, and a foul. Jordan Taylor with a money move and one.
All right, welcome to the Role Player Podcast. We have very distinguished guests, second round pick to the Detroit Pistons, current University of Tennessee Volunteers assistant coach, and 4-year professional basketball player, also all Big 12. We got to get all them accolades in there. If I'm missing anything, you can go ahead and fill it in for us. We got Kim English with us. Kim, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you.
What's up, guys? I'm glad to be here. Appreciate you guys having me. Excited to chop it up a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to get hop right into it. So, like I said offline, you're a busy man. So, first, just kind of touch on, for those that don't know, just kind of touch on your college career a little bit. Obviously, went to University of Missouri, had some good runs in the tournament. 4-year starter, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. I played at Missouri 2009 or 2012. We went to the Big Dance all 4 years, went to Elite Eight. My freshman year, a couple of Big 12 tournament championships, my freshman year, my senior year. It was a fun ride. Enjoyed watching you guys in the Big 10.
The best like conference at the time.
I used to call it the Big Slow.
Facts. That's a fact. But, it still is?
No, but it is great, great basketball in the Big 10. It was great coaches, especially at that time. I mean, your Tubby and Bo Ryan with you guys respectively. But yeah, man, played a few years pro, 1 year in the league, a couple years overseas, and I got into coaching in 2015, 16-ish, and been coaching ever since. And it's definitely my calling, I think. I'm more well-suited on this side of things.
I see you got that coach speak down now. You're talking about Bo Ryan. You got that. You sound like a coach, man. Sound just like a coach. That's good. Man, talk about – so you retired early from basketball. Talk about what that process was and, I guess, what factors played into you making that decision after just 4 years.
Yeah, I think it was only three, actually. I did 3 years, to be honest with you. And it was never my dream to play overseas. Like, right. And once you get a taste, like I say this to people, if I never got drafted, if I never played in the NBA, I think I could have had a 10-15 year career playing overseas in Europe. Mm-hmm. But you get a taste of the lifestyle in the league and it spoils, it's really hard to do anything else. Like, I was over there and they was like, yeah, we got to wear these sweatsuits. We got to eat dinner. you know, cell phones. And I'm like, what? Yeah. I'm like, we just left Paris. I'm about to go see my, I'm going to dinner with my man. Like,
I used to tell people my kids have more freedom than I did.
Yeah.
One in that, one I got to eat.
And I get it. I get it for college kids. I get it as you're developing these habits. But like, as an adult, as a, like, I mean, the preseason of the like conditioning and training. And I'm like, I just spent all off season getting ready to play a season. Like, oh, I got to do it again. You know, so it was just, it wasn't for me. And I respect the heck out of guys that do it. But it wasn't for me. And I knew I always wanted to be a coach. So, you know, I had to make a decision. Do I make, you know, do I continue making great money playing and maximizing, you know, your God-given athletic abilities and your skill as a basketball player, and then return to America at 35, 36, wanting to get into coaching and have to start at the bottom? Mm-hmm. Or do I get into college coaching now at a young age and can hopefully, when I'm 35, build myself up to be in a place where I can have great longevity in the profession?
Were you always in conversation with Coach Haith about coaching, even while you were playing?
I mean, Coach Haith, Konzo Martin, Kim Anderson, Will Wade, every coach, any coach, any and every coach that I had a relationship with, Paul Lusk, I was talking to them. So when I was a professional player, like, I played two more years after I wanted to stop. Like, right when I got cut from, I was like, all right, I'm getting to coaching. Like, I couldn't get back in the league. It's really hard to get back in the league because you're trying to get back in the league. And you got to play with guys that don't know how to play. You're playing with college guys or, you know, G League guys. So it's really difficult to play like that when you're used to playing with pros. So actually, my Coach Haith tried to talk me out of it for two whole years. Like, you're crazy. Like, no, you keep playing. You can always coach. You play till the wheels fall off. Like, it's a very cliche approach. But so I really had to prove to him that I could do it. I was 25, right? I could be an assistant coach in a major conference. It was the AAC. It was UConn. It was Houston. It was Cincinnati. It was Temple. It was Memphis. It was a really good league. So what I did was, for two straight seasons, when he was at Missouri in his first year at Tulsa, I, from France, I sent him a scouting report for every single game. Every single game. You know, offense, defense, personnel, keys on offense, keys on defense, tendencies, contingency plans. Like, for two straight seasons, I sent him I would go to practice, go home, work on a scouting report, go to the next practice, come on, work on a scouting report, send it to him and his staff for every single game. So he knew that aspect, right? He knew I knew how to prepare for an opponent. I started to dive into the high school class of 2016 and 17, like every single kid. If they had a Missouri tie, if they had a Maryland tie, if they had a prep school tie, if they had a Michigan tie, anything that correlated with my network, I would try to, like, know those kids,
right,
and tell him about kids. So he knew the recruiting piece was there. So when it was really time, he felt good about hiring me. You know, I just didn't say, hey, man, give me a job, right, because I was a player for you. I tried to show him that I really did take this profession seriously.
So talk about, man, the work ethic that, obviously, to play in the NBA, we all know, play basketball, you have a crazy work ethic. Talk about how that translates to coaching, and then talk about, like, the differences. Like, coaching sounds like more work than being a player, you know what I'm saying? So, and maybe not more, but different or more tedious, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, talk about that, yeah.
It's more work simply just from the math of it all. Like, I mean, you're a player, you are – motivated, like, it's yourself. You have to get yourself ready. Now, some really good player, you guys, great leaders, point guard, you cared about the people around you, but at the end of the day, you had to get yourself ready. You're stepping on a court with a team of 15 guys, and they're just looking at you, like, and you know how young guys, like, man, you know what he's talking about? I ain't understand. So you have to deal with all these clashing personalities at once. And then, I mean, you know, how different guys are motivated, you know, how you want practice to flow, or how you want to play, or how you're going to, you know, get this point across. You know, the work, and especially on the college side, like on the pro side, if you're in coaching, you can really only focus on basketball. That's it. But on the college side, player acquisition is maybe the biggest part of it. So the recruiting piece, now monitoring the transfer market, and it's it is a lot of hard work. I like to say the three areas as an assistant coach, as any coach, college coach, that you want to focus on, put time into these things every single day, is recruiting, player development, and just becoming a better basketball coach. You know, becoming a better basketball coach will help you in player and scouting or game planning. But those three areas every single day, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but us as players, sometimes we get a bad rap because there are some coaches that were good players who try to rest on those laurels. Right. Like, oh, I did it because I played. Like, I was a great player. I'm going to talk about my game. Like, I never talk about anything I did as a player with our guys. Now, if I jump out on the court and we played and they know, they can see it, right? But it's like, I want to be a great basketball coach. I want to know the what, why, when, how, where of every single thing that arises in the game. Coach, what am I looking for on this ball screen? Coach, where should I set this screen? Coach, why are we doing this? Coach, when do you want this to take place? Like, being able to answer all those questions, I think, really separates you as a coach, really learning the game. And the fact that you were a good player and you have that knowledge and expertise from being on the field to play, I think just takes it to another level.
So for you got to learn from a lot of great coaches, you know, Coach Barnes, Coach Hayes, like you said, Kwanzo. What are some of the similarities and differences that you have seen within those coaches as you continue to grow?
Yeah. Well, I played for Mike Anderson and Frank Hayes. I played for Lawrence Frank in Detroit. I spent a training camp with Thibodeau in Chicago, and I coached with Coach Hayes, Pat Boyle at Colorado, and now Coach Barnes. I'd say a similarity would be their commitment to their individual players. Coach Barnes, Coach Anderson, Coach Thibodeau are very tough coaches, like tough, like you're going to build through the grind, the hurt, the pain of practice and training is going to make you tougher and more prepared. Whereas Frank Haith and Tad Boyle are more, they want you to be confident. They want you to know that, you know, you like, they want you to feel good. They care about your freshness, a more professional approach. So I wouldn't say that there's one. The one thing that I say all those guys have in common is I think they are tremendous men of integrity, great husbands, great fathers. I've taken that from all of them, is that you do it the right way. Coach Boyle used to always say, you want to be able to sleep at night. And in this business and college side, it's a lot of, impermissible things going on in the recruiting process, and wanting to do it the right way, build a program the right way, and being able to sleep at night is important to me.
So you sound like you got a passion for coaching that rivals what you have for playing, for real. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's different. You know, playing, again, my dream was to be a really good college player and compete for championships. And I was all in when that was my life. And then it was to get to the NBA. And that was a wrong dream. My dream should not have been to get to the NBA, right? My dream should have been to stay in the NBA. When I got to the league, I thought I made it. Everybody was like, oh, man, you like a great locker room guy. You're a shooter. You're going to play 10, 15 years in the league, bro. You good. You're going to be like James Jones or Ray Allen. Now, I beat that. And it couldn't have been further from the truth. Like, you don't get to that league and make it. You get to that league and then it just starts, right? It's 60 in, 60 out every year, every year. So I kind of, I didn't know, you know? So, but again, once I got out of the league, overseas basketball didn't do it for me. Because of the bullshit, like, I don't care what I'm wearing on this road trip. I don't want to eat with the team. I don't need the same thing. I get somewhere. I want to FaceTime my family. I get to pair. I want to show them the Eiffel Tower. Like, so go ahead.
No, keep going. My fault. Keep going.
So then coaching did become my passion because, once I got to Europe, playing became a self-centered pursuit. Like I didn't care about a championship. I signed whoever was offering the biggest check, that's where I went.
Mercenary.
And that was, as a basketball lifer and lover, like someone that loves and respects this beautiful game, that wasn't right for my teammates to have me out there. Like, I'd get the game, win or lose, I'm untying my shoes, like, the same way, like.
Well, I think it's crazy that every overseas basketball player has probably had that feeling, like, at some point. Where it's like, so I think I could admire the fact, like, you walking away and kind of realizing that, because there's been several times where I'm like, damn, do I even want to do this anymore? And I think on the flip side, your love for the game does keep you going as well, just because you love to play. But the same cast of winning ain't not the same.
And the paper keep you going too.
And the paper. Yeah, no doubt. No, yeah. You're a mercenary.
That,
no.
That was, I felt wrong. Like I'm not, and I wasn't doing anything on the court, you know, let's say like anything that like dishonorable. Like I played hard, I played to win. But when I see the people playing a Euro League championship and they're like, and I'm like, like it's a clip on YouTube. And again, I'm coming from the NBA, and the first team I go to is a great team in Italy, Montepaschi Siena. And Siena was in the Euro League. Right. And we have Euro League Media Day, and I don't have any more respect for the Euro League than I have for like the second division in Nigeria. Like I have no clue of the levels of overseas basketball. Yeah. And we're doing Euro League Media Day. And I guess there's like a song at the beginning of Euro League TV. It's like devotion, devotion. But they had all of us saying it, right? Like singing it. And Daniel Hackett and Othello Hunter, they're singing it with such like passion. Wow. And I'm literally, I think you can find it on YouTube. I'm literally on camera like, devotion, devotion. And they're like, come on, man, passion. And I'm like, so that is like, that's my overseas career in a nutshell. My favorite experience, actually, when I knew I was done playing, but I just wanted to collect one more check, I went to Venezuela. And it was my absolute best time playing basketball as a professional outside of the league. Like, I think it's hemisphere or whatever. Like, I think the Western hemisphere, no matter if you're North America or South America or Puerto Rico, we're more the same.
Yeah.
Than go to Europe.
Yeah.
Like,
or Asia, yeah.
We had one practice a day. Like, they got it. They just knew, like,
yeah. It ain't. Honestly, though, I think it is just Europe that's like that, because I'm in Japan now, and Asia is not like, we got one practice a day, never anything other than that. So it's, I think it's just Europe. Man, so walking away, though, obviously you say you wanted to be a coach, you knew you wanted to be a coach, but was there any type of fear, or like what was your like mental, emotional, whatever process? Because again, you play basketball your whole life, even though you want to be a coach, like you're still walking into some like unknown, right? So to a degree. So what was your process with that?
There was no fear, because it's still basketball,
right?
And you know, so I could have went to the NBA to coach right away. I said there was a little fear. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say fear. But I've always, like, when people talk to me about basketball, I always think, like, what have you done? Like, what have you done? Like, where'd you play? Who'd you coach? Were you in the front office? What have you won? Like, I'm very judgmental when people talk. Back, I shouldn't say judgmental, but I was as a player. I was judgmental when people would talk basketball to me. Like when reporters would be really opinionated, I'd be looking at them like, do you really know what you're saying? But so I felt a little bit of intimidation about going to the league at such a young age, because I was thinking if I were a player playing for myself, I would be like, man, what do you know? Like, you play 1 year in this one. You don't know nothing. Like, so there was a great comfort in college, knowing that I was a good player in college and I could still dominate these guys playing the game. Like, so there was just a confidence there. And then I came into it with a great growth mindset. Like, I wanted to grow. I wanted to learn. I wasn't hiding that. I wasn't afraid to say what I didn't know, and I would learn what I didn't know quickly. So it became comfortable. I think when you go into any situation with a humble growth mindset, you settle in. I think it puts people at ease. I wasn't coming at, like, when players are trying to, like, talk to me about coming into coaching, and I asked them if they, like, watched our game, whatever. I'll just say, hey, did you watch our game last night? Or I'll say, hey, watch our game tonight on ESPN. We'll talk tomorrow. We'll talk about it. When they come at me like, oh, y'all should do this. Y'all should do this. Y'all should do this. Y'all should have did this. Man, y'all know what y'all doing. Da, da, da. Like, I'm like, whoa. Like, you're gonna program off. Like, you know, talk about what we did do well. You know, talk about what you like that the other team did. Don't come in it so aggressive, having or wanting to prove that you know so much about basketball. Like, be humble. Like, right. Be humble. Be willing to learn, like, want to learn. Even still, like, when I talk to, like, a Brad Stevens or Eric Spoelstra, I'm, like, taken back by their humility. I'm like, you know, so I just, I don't know.
Nah, but I want to, let's touch on your year in the league, man. So how was that experience for you? Do you think, you know, is it one of those situations you got drafted to the wrong place? If you get drafted to, you know, a clear organization, you think you last a little bit longer?
Yeah, it was a little unlucky going to a team that was struggling. And it's a great organization, Detroit. Great history and tradition. They were transitioning into new ownership. But was not a good team, not great culture. I like to say if I would have got drafted or undrafted, if I would have went undrafted and could have chose to go to the Golden State Warriors or the San Antonio Spurs, where I could have been a great locker room guy, hard worker, great teammate, you know, you could have developed, right, into having a career. But when you go to a team that won 26 to 30 games, whatever it was we won, that loses, and you have a contract that is expiring or expirable or expendable, that GM is going to get rid of you. Because it just prolongs his career, right? That he can sell to the owner, hey, getting rid of this, bringing in this guy. Like, you know, like I averaged 2.9 points a game my rookie year, and the Pistons cut me and signed a dude from Italy named Luigi Datome. And
that was my teammate in my first year in Italy. He came from my team to Detroit.
And Luigi Datome, when he got done in Detroit, I think he ended up averaging like 2.7 points per game. Yeah. Like it was nothing. But at the time, it's something you can sell to the owner, right? It's just something different. So it's and that's the I guess the little bit of pettiness in me still thinking like that. But the truth is the matter, I didn't work with the ferocity and vigor that I did as a college athlete. Like I wasn't going back up there late. I wasn't coming in dumb early. I was still one of the first ones in the gym. I still stayed at the practice and shot every day. I worked, but I didn't have the type of nasty hunger that you need to stick in that league.
Who were your vets that year?
Say it again.
Who were your vets on the team?
Great guys. But like, again, at the end of careers where they made a lot of money, it was Charlie Villanueva, Jason Maxill, Rodney Stuckey, Corey Maggette, Tayshaun Prince was a great one, Will Bynum, all guys that had already had their best years were behind them. Right. You know, this their last hurrah. I think maybe Stuckey ended up playing two more years after that. Everyone else was out of the league the next year.
Forgot about Rodney Stuckey. You were cold too.
Yeah, but but great guys, but it was no longer a championship culture within the team aspect. But a great experience. Great experience. I learned more in one season in the league than I've ever learned in any amount of time I played basketball combined. 82 games. The games are longer. The reps are better. Like, I, to this day, you know, watch NBA basketball now. The stuff I learned in one season of the league has carried me a long way.
Would you want to coach in the league? Is that something that you or is it college all the way?
It's intriguing. I like the college side of things right now just because of the impacting young people's lives. Is going to find a kid that's living in poverty, but you see something in them, and being able to bring to this university and give him an education and, you know, help him be able to change the trajectory of his family's life forever. There is no better feeling than that. Seeing one of your kids graduate. I have like my first player, second player getting married this summer. A couple guys I've coached have kids now. So that is like a really fun thing to see them, you know, be able to like go back on stories when you're hard on them and tough on them. And yeah, coach, that like that really changed my life. Or now, like, I still think about that to this day. Or sure. Like, there is no better feeling than that. And you get to the NBA side, it's a little bit more coaching egos and stuff like that.
Talk about the evolution then, like you said, you know, finding these kids. Talk about the evolution of recruiting, and I guess how that affects coaching, how it changes it for you, if at all. Like, you know, now you find a guy, they can transfer, and you gotta stay alert to the transfer market more so than in the past, yeah. Right? Like, and
yeah,
how that dynamic has changed and how you've adjusted to it.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I think the way recruiting affects coaching is that you just have to understand that we can't be the, I don't want to call these guys dictators, but we can't be the same dictators as coaches of old. Right. You can't just browbeat guys to death anymore because it's a different athlete that we're coaching. Like, they do have the just go on a transfer portal and leave. And they look at that as a great mechanism of empowerment. And I'm all for it. Like, I'm all for player empowerment. But at the same token, we got that same portal. Like, we can go get a player to replace you. So, like, it's again, like, players try to use it as like a token over your head. But I'm like, hey, man, we're going to coach our team for what's best for this team. And what's best for you. And if you don't like it, if you want to leave, you can leave and we can go get another player. Like, so you have to, that's why I said you have to spend time in recruiting every day. You have to know players.
Right.
Like, there's a great player from Minnesota that just transferred, Trevor, I've been talking to. He's coming back home on a flight home today, actually. From and you just gotta know. You gotta have your ear to the ground, you gotta know. You have to have a good pulse of your team. You have to be able to feel who's good, who's coming back, who's dipping, and like, can you replace them? But it's great. It's fun. It's team building. It's meeting new people. It's even great seeing, like, I recruited a kid from Seattle this past year named Paulo Banchero, and I was all in on him. I thought we were going to get him, and he ends up going to Duke, and like, we still have a great relationship. Like, he's still my guy. Like, I recruited a kid when I was at Tulsa named BJ Bailey. He's from Austin, Texas. BJ, we didn't get him at Tulsa. We lost to Oregon. He went to Oregon. I left Tulsa, went to Colorado. He was also in the Pac-12. So I got to coach against BJ for 2 years. And he wasn't happy at Oregon. I left Colorado to Tennessee. We connected. He's our second leading scorer here at Tennessee right now. Like, so those relationships, even if you don't get the kid – I guess we're not supposed to, but like me, I keep those relationships. I'm not trying to recruit them. Like, I just think it's really disingenuous for me to talk to. If you, Jordan Taylor, I recruit you since you're a sophomore in high school. Right. And at the hour, your senior year, you say, coach, I'm going to go somewhere else. 2.5 years of a relationship, me talking to your parents and your coaches and your grandparents and you, like, I can't just like cut that off.
Right.
Like,
right.
If I see you had a great game, I was like, great game, bro. If I follow you on Instagram and I see something funny that we laughed about a couple weeks, I'm going to send you that DM.
Right.
You know,
right.
I keep those relationships really natural. And honestly, that's what it is. You just build relationships with players that you really like or vibe with their game. And then you hope they come play for you. You know,
Paulo is the dude, like the big fella.
Yeah, big nice, fella. Buddy. He whatever you want him to be. He whatever you want him to
be. It's like him and Chet are the two. Were like the two. Yeah. Who's the Minnesota kid? You talking about Jameson Battle?
I can't comment on prospects.
Yeah. Okay, my fault. He went to my high school. Yeah, he went to my high school.
I'm from
Minnesota. Yeah, I'm from Minneapolis, and he went to my high school, and then he transferred out. I think his junior and senior year. So
yes, Coach McKinley Wright at Colorado.
Okay. From
Robbinsdale.
Yep.
And I coached another Minnesota kid at Tulsa named Markel Curtis.
Okay, I don't know him. Yeah. I know McKinley for sure. He had a hell of a career out there too.
Another one we let go, man. I don't even want to bring it up.
You said what?
So another one we let go.
Man, ain't nobody trying to go to Minnesota, bro.
Right, he committed to come on.
Ain't nobody going to Minnesota, bro.
You go to Boulder?
You didn't even go to Minnesota. What you mean?
Like, it was a different time, different era. Huh?
He did.
He talking about initially I went to Marquette. First.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah, that man didn't go to Minnesota. Don't let him. Yeah.
So you played for Crean or Buzz?
I played for Crean, and Crean left and took the Indiana job after my freshman year, and I came home.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I thought you went straight to Minnesota.
If Tubby was here, I probably would have stayed, though.
Okay.
But the coach before, I knew he was about to get fired, and I was like, I don't know who they're going to bring in.
Munson?
Yeah, Dan Munson.
Man, so hold up. So you talked about keeping relationships. That's the dope side of that, of the transfer portal, and you know how VJ ended up with you in Tennessee after all them years. But kind of compare it to your situation in Detroit, whereas, you know, guys become expendable. Do you see that becoming like an issue in college basketball if it comes more like this free agent type situation? So
I think that at this level, it's a thin line, right? Because you want to win. And competition breeds. Like, I have never, ever told a kid to leave. Never. I've never said, you're not welcome here. If I made the decision, or we made the decision that you're good enough to come. So I've never done that. But what I do is recruit. I will recruit. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I don't know if I should say this, but like, here, I'll say it. Like, we continuously are recruiting the best players. Right. And you're just hoping that the cream's going to rise to the top. Like, you know, we have a all-conference point guard, right? We're bringing in the number one point guard in America next year. Like, the cream's going to rise to the top. Like, the better player and that really good player just might be a backup. You know,
Alongside each other. Shit, I mean,
it's all gonna work out, man. And the reason why I feel okay about it is good players want to play with good players. Like, recruiting now has turned into building a team with the recruits. Mm. He's like, nah, like, yeah, I love, like Paulo really wanted to play with the kid Kennedy. They're like, and Paulo ended up, he got his little squad at Duke. He got some big time players next year, Adrian Griffin, and they have a great class going to Duke next year. So like, that's kind of what it becomes. And
how do you sell that though? Because I know me, if I'm the big man, I'm all conference. So you tell me the next year you're bringing the number one. I get it from your side, but like, how do you actually sell it to the player and make them actually believe it?
Keep getting better, man. Keep getting better. Or you can just be so good, or you can just be so good that we don't recruit that same position. Right? You know, but there's also, you have to protect, you know, both sides of this thing, because what if, Trevor, you're so good and you are now a draft pick as an underclassman? So, like, now where are we? So, like, it's a middle ground in there. Like, that's why I said you have to spend time recruiting every day. You have to keep all options open. Because if Trevor Mbakwe is so good but not a pro, then maybe we're good there. Let's get a young development guy to back up Trevor. But now, man, Trevor's had 20 and 15 in like three straight Big Ten games. Like, we need to get some really good, some big man options. Cause I think, you know, I'm hearing chirps, you know, his people around him are saying he's going to go. So we got to get this guy, you know. Oh man, Trevor's been, man, we really were dependent on him, but, and I'm being like crystal clear right now, really open. How big is your podcast audience right now? I'll never
not that. We probably got like 300 followers on Instagram, 600. So I don't know. It's not that big.
Oh, is Instagram not Twitter?
No, it's Instagram and Twitter. It's on Apple. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify, but we don't got a ton of listeners like that.
Okay, good.
Like man sat back like you about to end up on First Take in the morning.
You can say something crazy to get us there, you know.
But like,
drop a dime on one of the SEC coaches.
No. I probably said too much, honest, because I'm comfortable. Probably said too much, but.
Stop mid sentence.
It's that thin line. Like if you're not producing, right, we're not telling you to leave, but we may be inclined to recruit someone that we think has potential to be better. Right. You know, the cream will rise to the top.
But so cream will rise. Like that's athletics, right? That's hooping. That's since you was a kid. But I feel like there's always this inherent feeling in college sports where it's like the coaches still have an obligation to kind of protect kids. You know what I'm saying? Like you got to be a little bit more delicate. You keep it straight. And our coaches always yelled at us, but it's always like a feeling of a little bit more like you're not a pro. So they're not going to quite treat you like a pro.
So that is it. So that goes back to me saying, I'll never tell a kid he has to leave. Never. Okay. I'm going to continue to spend the time. We call it daily vitamins, working on your game. Right. To help become a better player. But like if you're consistently not getting it done, we're going to try to get someone that can. That's while we're helping you become a better player and get it done.
Either way, you fighting for your livelihood. So what's the fine line for you as, you know, as a coach reaching your goals, but at the pushing the kids, but if the kid's not getting it done, you kind of gotta, you know, I'm trying to do this, not helping me, you know what I'm saying?
I'll never tell a kid to leave. I rest on my integrity. I rest on the fact that the university, the athlete, the program, over everything, like I'm going to try to make our team better in player acquisition. And I'm also going to try to make our players better in player development. Like, so if both of those things collide, I think it's good for everyone involved. Right. I think the competition is a good thing. Right. You know, we see 2 5-star freshmen this year, Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson. They will both be, Keon will be a top 10 pick this year. Jaden is probably a first rounder this year. 2 5-star freshmen. We had another 5-star who is now a sophomore, and Josiah James. And we brought in VJ Bailey, right? So that's a experienced sophomore and a redshirt junior playing the 2 and the 3, right? And we have 2 5-star one-and-done kids playing the 2 and the 3. And from practices, preseason, from the start of the season, when our season started, the sophomore and the junior were starting. The 2 one-and-done kids were coming off the bench. Like, so
– right.
Those guys, those older guys, beat out the younger guys. Now, as
you see, type of competition, right.
Now, and it's great competition, and it's a team, so you have great brotherhood and relationships. And when we're in practice, we're hooking up, we're going at it, and that's flipped some. They've been starting; it's going back and forth all year. The freshmen have really, you know, asserted themselves as to be really good college players, but. Josiah went through an injury, but was in a great streak. BJ. So like now as a coach, look like, man, like I don't look at it as like starting, right? Like let's use example with Trevor mixed with the example of the wings that I just explained to you, right? I don't look at it like, oh, these freshmen over these older guys, but these older guys over these freshmen. I look at it as, man, we got a really good 5-man guard rotation. I look at it like, 5-star freshman coming off the bench playing against other teams' backups. Yeah. I look at not like it's Trevor Bakwe or this or Paulo Banchero. I look at that, man, we got Paulo Banchero. I probably should keep using his name, but like, I got this great player, Trevin Bakwe, and like, I got a really good big man rotation. Like, and like, right. that's the culture you want to create. It's like, those are the best teams. Right. You don't want to be on a team where you just key in on one guy and then there's such a great drop off when you come out of the game. You want to be like playing like a tag team wrestling match, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, I play with Juwan Williams now. We talk about that a lot. Yeah. His team in North Carolina. Were 8, 9 deep. They had Marvin Williams coming off the bench and, you know, averaging 11 points a game. So, yeah. And it's like, I feel like the narrative, at least, is rare to see them 5-star kids be willing to come off the bench. You know, it's like, if that happens, they're going to be disappointed. That's the narrative. I mean, you in it, so you know better, but
it becomes how you deliver your message. What's really important. Yeah. Scotty Barnes at Florida State was the ACC freshman of the year and the sixth man of the year. He'll be a top 10 pick this year.
Yeah.
Like, that's our job. You're like, we work in higher education. We're educators. Like, break this down. Like, you want to start the game or do you want to hit the game winner? You can only pick one. What are you going to pick? I'm at Jordan. What do you want?
You're talking to me. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to hit the game winner.
Do you want to be in the last 5 minutes of an Elite Eight game to take your team to Final Four, or do you want to start? Right. I'm asking you that question.
Oh, I want to take the last 5 minutes. I'm both, but I want to play the last 5 minutes if I got to choose.
Do you get drafted in the first round and have a 15-year career in the league, or do you want to start?
Yeah, right. Second one.
Like, play time. And being able to be productive on the court is more important than what your parents are telling you. Oh, you should be starting. Like,
right.
You know.
So you would say a lot of the problems, or I guess that narrative comes, or I guess the issues with that come from coaches' lack of ability to deliver a message more so than
deliver the message. That's right. Like, that's you know, it's not. And when we made the switch. When we started, you know, so now the 5-star kids are starting, right?
Yeah.
And the older guys are coming off the bench. It's not go to the bench. Like, you know, you weren't good. It's, hey man, I think you can really help our team by doing this. You know, get to those young guys play, you get that first run, you get to see what's going in the game, you get to go in the game against backups. Right. Like, I got 13 minutes till the bus leaves for practice too.
Oh no.
Okay. Yeah, we're gonna get you up out of here. We're going to get you up out of here tonight. Trev, you got something else?
Nah, man. Appreciate you being on, man. Can't wait to watch you guys play with tomorrow, right? SEC tournament?
Yep, SEC tournament tomorrow at, I don't know what time in Japan, but 1:30 here.
1:30 p.m. there? Yeah. Well, I'm going to catch y'all in the tournament, though, for sure.
How challenging has this year been for you guys going through COVID and just all the distractions that's happened?
And I'll say this, it has been challenging. It's been challenging for our guys not to be able to just hang out with each other at team meals. It's only two guys to a table instead of, you know, the big circle where we're, you know, those times like those where we're riding around on three buses right now, 12 guys to a bus. So it's just you don't have that camaraderie. You know, we're asking those guys not to go out, not to be out around town, not to go to parties and clubs like Duke. I don't know if you guys know this. Duke's season just ended.
Yeah.
Before we got on here, Duke got a positive case and their season's over. And like, obviously the administrators from institutionally, conference-wise, nationwide, it's been great. It's been high level, but the sacrifice that our players have made has made this season so memorable. Like, it's been tough. They've had to be resilient. We've got games canceled, postponed. You know, so I just have so much respect for all our guys have done to allow us to have a season.
Dope. Yeah. Man, well, we definitely appreciate you coming on, joining us, man, taking your time out. Good luck in the conference tournament. Good luck in the NCAA tournament. And good luck to you, too, as your career progresses, for sure.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No doubt.
All right, fellas. All right.